Public Safety and Judicial Program, and we will begin the briefing with Mr. Wilson. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For the record, Doug Wilson, the Legislative Fiscal Office, and hopefully I'm not too technically challenged here with these. We're here talking about the Public Safety and Judicial. We've combined these in many of the publications this year because of what we want to staff, both as a Judiciary Committee and LFO staff, to try to get people to think of public safety, including both the traditional public safeties and the judicial branches. And I'll make a plug for our hearing that's a week and a half away later in the presentation. My comments will be rather brief. These are the agencies in this program area, and without going through them, but those of some significant size with issues that you'll need to address include the Department of Corrections, Judicial Department, Oregon Youth Authority, State Police, and then some of the smaller ones will also have some significant issues. For example, the DAs have been cut significantly and will be facing some real challenges along with the county funding challenges that they have. The next slide shows what part or what share in proportion to the total budget that this area has. In terms of general fund and lottery funds, it makes up 16% of general fund and lottery funds. This is up slightly from the previous two biennia, 99-01 and 01-03, where it was roughly 15% of the budget. In terms of the total funds budget by the areas, it is about 7%, which is roughly the same as it has been the previous two biennia. And showing that relationship, it is primarily a general funded area of the budget, as the next slide shows. In terms of its revenue sources, 75% of revenues for this area comes from the general fund. Some of the larger departments are heavily general funded, like corrections, for example, is roughly 95% general funded, and so that plays through to many of the other agencies. The federal funds non-limited represents just a little under 1%, and that is entirely in the Office of Emergency Management, which is part of the state police, in terms of federal grants that pass through to local governments. The federal funds, roughly a little over 77% in 01-03. There you have Oregon State Police having a large share of that, Oregon Youth Authority, and the military department being those agencies that have a large, a proportionally large degree compared to other agencies in this group of federal funds. The other funds, non-limited, is both in the Attorney General, the Justice Department, and to a lesser extent in the for 0305 in the Judicial Department. And other funds, roughly 15% of the funding for these agencies, and the largest share of that is in the Oregon State Police, much of that in the 911 revenues that flow through the state police, then out to the various call centers across the state. And the Department of Justice also has a large share of other funds. Much of that is the charges they have against state agencies for the services they provide as the state's legal counsel to the various state agencies. In terms, in 01-03, in terms of how the money is spent, 46% is personal services, compensation and benefits to state employees. Services and supplies make up 23% in 01-03. Capital outlay is almost 6% in 01-03. You'll see in one of the next slides that it's considerably less in 03-05. Debt service, this is basically paying off the construction over the past few years in the Department of Corrections and the Oregon Youth Authority that makes up just under 5% of the budget. And finally, special payments make up roughly 20%. There's a good example of the special payments in this program area are the community corrections grants that are in the Department of Corrections that are paid to counties for the parole and probation and post-prison supervision that goes on. Just another note in terms of capital outlay or the debt service, we are also paying debt service on the construction of local jails through the Senate Bill 1145 process. There was considerable amount of money paid out to the, by the state out for construction of those facilities across the state. In terms of the 0305 budget, in terms of funding sources, basically same uses as the 0103. The general fund is slightly reduced as a proportion of total funding in this program area. One other large note is that federal funds, you'll see a considerable increase in there. That is generally due to the way that child support is funded. There was a switch between 0103 and 0305 where previous biennia, the general fund and the federal funds came from the Department of Human Services and then were spent by the Department of Justice under a contract. In this biennium, or in the 0305 budget, the general fund and federal funds flow directly to the Department of Justice, and they are now the lead agency. I should also note that I didn't before, the lottery funds are exclusively in the Oregon State Police, and these are used for enforcement of water habitat through the Oregon plan by their Fish and Wildlife Division. In terms of the use of the funds in 0305, personal services as a proportion is up a little bit. I think the note here would be that the capital outlay, if you noticed, in a previous slide, in 0103, it represented roughly about 5% of the budget. Here it's about 1.3, and that reflects that the governor's budget, and I'm sure the staff behind me from budget management will go into this, is that there is really no new construction in the budget this time. Prisons that were to be constructed have been delayed in this budget for the Department of Corrections. The next slide shows the growth overall in terms of general fund and total funds. It's generally, you know, the growth trends are similar to other parts of state government. I want to just make a note there between the 0103 approved and the governor's. There is growth between that, but one of the factors in that is that switch in funding for child support. It was, I think, around $12 million of general fund that transferred, was in DHS's budget, Department of Human Services budget, in 0103, that is now part of Justice, and that's one of the components for that growth. It's, you know, neutral to the state budget as a whole, but it's an increase in this program area. If you take a look at the all funds sort of by agency, the Department of Corrections represents the largest share by far, followed by the state police, the judicial and justice, and Oregon Youth Authority. And there are some rather small agencies here that almost show zero or don't show up in the graphs. They are some of them under $1 million. They're near the top of that graph. In terms of general fund and lottery funds, again, the same characteristics. Department of Corrections is by far the largest with a budget just shy of $1 billion, $955 million. General fund, followed by judicial, the youth authority, state police, and the Public Defense Services Commission, which includes the trial and appellate public defender role in state government. The budget drivers for this area are numerous, and I'll just touch on these, and I think the governor's staff will also touch on a number of them. First one, in terms of Department of Corrections, Youth Authority, and the Parole and Post-Supervision Board, the arrest, prosecution, sentencing practices, specifically ballot measure 11, have played a large role in the growth in these budgets. I think the presentation later on will include a graph that shows sort of what share of the Department of Corrections population is due to ballot measure 11. We have a prison forecast that estimates the state and county correctional-related population, so it's come out twice a year. It affects both the Department of Corrections prison population, the local community corrections population, and then it also provides information for the Oregon Youth Authority. There are a number of state and federal mandates. Some of them are constitutionally based, both state and federal, around what services or what conditions the correctional institutions and the OYA facilities must provide in terms of services. There are, we also, of course, one of the drivers or one of the factors will be the impact of budget cuts on the public safety system as a whole, and also on the degree of the number of convictions or as people move into the prison system. You'll find in many of the budgets, OYA and Department of Corrections, that there are various service needs of their the people they serve or incarcerate that have to be addressed. Those are sometimes based on state and federal mandates, but those would be things like A&D treatment, mental health, education. Many of those are prevention-related or preparing folks as they are released to be fit back into the community and be more successful as they move out of the incarcerated situations. Number of offenders being released to community supervision are driving both the juvenile and the adult community corrections arena, as well as the number of offenders that violate the conditions that are community supervision, violators of parole and probation. Some of those end up back in jail or back in the state correctional system. Judicial Department, their budget drivers mainly are around the impact of reduced court hours that are built into the governor's budget and the effect they have on a number of things. I think just a quick note here, CFAA or criminal fines and assessment, that revenue source, even though I don't think it's reflected in the governor's budget, could be affected by a number of factors built into the governor's budget, and I think that's an issue that you will need to look at as we move through the various agencies' hearings. And also the impact of budget reductions on a right to speedy trial in criminal and speedy trial and a jury trial in criminal cases will be impacted by the budget reductions. Similar also in the Public Defense Services Commission, the right to counsel at trial and appeal levels will be a major factor, a major driver in these budgets. In terms of the state police, the number of drivers, the number of miles driven on state highways is a major budget driver. I'm sure some of you have heard from some of the local communities about their concerns about the level of forensics resources in the state budget. Most of the forensics requests or processing is not by a state agency or request by state agencies, requested by local government law enforcement officials. So that is a major driver is the number of requests for forensics and also in the criminal investigation area of the state police. Again, impact of budget reductions on road and community safety issues are a concern that need to be taken a look at when you look at the state police. Various things across the entire public safety judicial area that need to take a look at or keep in mind in terms of budget drivers. What happens to the continuum of all public safety resources and agencies? This is also a plug right now. The public safety subcommittee, judicial on the House side committee, and I believe the Senator Winter's Human Services Committee will be holding a joint hearing in about a week and a half to take a look at the entire public safety judicial branch or set of services and agencies to talk about how interrelated they are. And when you make changes in policy, changes in the budget of one agency, how that affects other agencies down the line. So we offer and invite anyone who wants to attend that aren't members of those committees or subcommittees to attend that meeting. I believe it starts at 1 o'clock on Monday, Tuesday of the week after next. I think I'll conclude with that and turn it over to the governor's staff that are sitting behind me.
All right. Thank you.
Any
questions? Any questions? Thanks again.
Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. I'm Linda Gilbert from Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management. I'm the Public Safety Coordinator for BAM. And what a wonderful room this has become. In our public safety overview, we will not be covering all public safety agencies. We will cover corrections in Oregon Youth Authority, state police, public safety standards and training, as well as criminal fines and assessment. And finally, we'll end with Department of Justice and the Judicial Department. So on to corrections. The budget organization for corrections is, first of all, the biggest part of it is institutions and programs. And this is, of course, the physical facilities and the treatment programs that are offered in each of them. Community corrections is that portion of the budget that covers parole and probation, post-prison supervision, as well as inmates sentenced to 12 months or less and housed in communities. Administration and support, of course, provides agency direction, business and finance services, information systems, human resources, that sort of thing. Debt service is a fairly significant part of this budget, again, for the certificates of participation that have been issued over the years for building prisons, capital improvements for maintenance of facilities, and finally capital construction for actual prison construction. And next we will take another look at the budget drivers that Doug was talking about. This is a slide that I believe you may have already gotten one time this week, and it shows from, it's too small to read.
Look on the screen like we do.
January of 85. Anyway, it shows the history up to January or November of 02. And then the projection from there on out, and you can see quite a steep rise. Oh, thank you. The increase all the way from now until the year 2012 is about 25%. The increase for 03-05 from now is about 6.5% for population. This slide shows a smaller period of time. It's from September of 02 through the end of the 03-05 biennium. It compares in the Salmon area the base bed capacity, or shows the base bed capacity of beds that are existing now and the ones that are in the pipeline to come on during the 03-05 biennium. It also, and then in the blue area above that, the top line of that is the October 2002 forecast. So what you see immediately is that the base capacity is not sufficient to cover the forecast. And then the top blue area is additional temporary and county rental beds that are going to be brought on in order to handle the forecast in 03-05. Now, it looks like there are lots and lots of extra beds just sitting there doing nothing in that light blue area on top. A couple of things to note. This has a baseline at 11,000. This is not a baseline of zero inmates. It starts at 11,000 and goes up from there so that we can show where the beds are. And also, the beds in the lighter blue area are what are known as management beds, and that's about 3% of the estimated population. Management beds would be infirmary beds or special management or intensive management beds. The budget is driven by the forecast. It's funded inmate by inmate, not bed by bed. So this cushion of beds for special uses are not funded specifically. It's just an inmate is funded. The inmate is in general population or in the infirmary or in special management. And that's why it appears to have extra beds. The population forecast as of the October 2002 forecast in July of 2002, an actual of 11,450. Last weekend it was 11,632. In July of 03, at the beginning of the next biennium, it'll be about 12,000. At the end of the biennium, it'll be about 12,786, growing. The next slide is one that I think
Excuse me, earlier.
This
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I don't know if anyone else is looking at these figures. Maybe I'm the odd guy out here, but a 25% increase in prison population in the next 10 years and the cycle continuing up, I know that the subcommittee will deal with these a lot more carefully than we have, but to me that's a stunning figure and a statement about our society and our judicial system, and I just can't let it go by with everyone's sort of glazed eyes here. We're incarcerating a larger and larger number of people. Are we going to talk about, at this level, the drivers for that, or is it going to be in the subcommittee only?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Bates, I believe this will be probably a subcommittee discussion. One of the main drivers illustrated here, and that is not necessarily that there are a lot more people coming into the system or that there are a lot more crimes, although crimes are added from time to time. It's that sentences are fixed and they're long. And so the basic way of calculating the population increase is what's your base, who's in now, who's going to come in, who's going to go out in any given month. But there's not necessarily more coming in, but fewer going out, and that puts upward pressure on the population.
Follow-up question?
Go ahead.
I assume that's the effect of ballot measure 11, but it would seem that once you have that population stabilized, it'll level off with people coming in and going out somewhere down the line, 15, 16, 10 years. Have you projected that out at all?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Bates, our forecasting is done in DAS's Office of Economic Analysis, and I can get a better answer from them for you, for the committee, on that question.
Thank you. It's probably something for the subcommittee anyway, but I was just curious. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Winters.
Thank you. Just to follow up on Representative Bates' question, can you provide, this members of this panel, the information of the population when we started determinant sentencing, which was back with the guidelines, and then moved to measure 11, and how much longer are we holding on average individuals in the institution? And then you get the add-on. But in addition to that, what now is the average age in longevity inside the institution, and what kind of impacts and implications that's having on the service driver in the institution? Because I think we're holding people longer and we're getting into a geriatric situation inside the institution, which is requiring more medical and some of the other issues that we didn't have prior to determinant sentencing. So if you can give that kind of information of what's happening inside the environment itself.
Yes, co-chairs. Senator Winters, I will get that for the panel. I'm assuming my colleague behind me is writing down these questions as they occur.
Yes.
Okay.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Co-Chair Miller. I apologize for digressing to the group. Back on slide 19, I guess I'm still confused. I see the base capacity line, and I see the forecast line, and then I see the capacity with temporary emergency and rental beds. Is that the capacity with temporary emergency and rental beds, is that additional capacity that is not needed based upon what the forecast is showing?
Co-chairs, Representative Smith, it appears to be not needed capacity, but the type of capacity in the light blue section is special beds. They call them management beds. And that would be special management unit beds or intensive management unit beds or infirmary beds, that sort of thing. And so in addition to general population beds, there are these special kinds of beds that are needed, as well as emergency beds if there's a sudden fluctuation in the population that requires another five beds other than what they absolutely have in general population. It may be a temporary thing.
A follow-up question. Has the Department of Corrections conducted any type of analysis looking at the additional capacity within the Oregon Youth Authority and seeing what the cost would be to retrofit those facilities to assist DOC rather than going out and renting beds?
Co-chairs, Representative Smith, they are looking into that as we speak.
Thank you. Yay.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the early 90s and mid-90s, the Department of Corrections tended to overestimate population growth. Has that improved since that time?
Co-Chair Senator Devlin, we keep track of actuals versus forecast, and in the time that I have had this department in my portfolio, the variance has been something like, I think, at the highest, 1%. As of, for instance, last weekend, it was 0.1% variance. Very, very close.
That's a lot better than it used to be, actually. If you go back to some of the early estimates when, Mr. Chairman, if you go back to some of the early estimates of what the population growth would have been under Measure 11 and under the increased penalties for some property charges, They were much higher than this, actually. One thing, too, in terms of the institutions, is there any comparisons being done on the cost of various institutions in terms of whether or not some institutions are significantly higher cost for inmates versus others?
Senator Devlin, yes. The department does keep track of this kind of cost, and each institution is a little different because they were built at different times and with different philosophies of what an institution should look like. So there are different costs at each institution, and the department can provide what those actual differences are, if that's something you'd like.
Thank you. Please proceed.
This shows the agency's budget by program area. It is expressed in all funds, total funds. Debt service is about 11% of the agency's budget, generally runs about that high, around $100 million. And that is all general fund. Institutions and programs is certainly the greatest portion of it at about 64%. The general fund portion of that is $600 million, so a very high percentage is general fund. Community corrections in the 0305 budget is $153 million, or about 15%, and that's all general fund. And finally, in administration and support, capital improvement, of the $104 million that's shown in total funds, $94.5 million of that is general fund. This next display is the agency's budget history in table form. In general fund, if you look at 2003-05 compared to 2001-03, through the fifth special session, you see a significant increase, which is not generally what you're going to be seeing in agency budgets. The governor set the funding level for 0305 sufficient to incarcerate the projected population. It's done without additional construction in 0305. It's been stopped, and it's done instead by purchasing and installing additional temporary beds and by finding rental beds and using emergency beds. And that could be about $100 million. The rest of the increase from the end of the fifth special session is about $50 million, and that's a restoration of debt service. There were one-time reductions in debt service taken in 0103 that have to be restored in 0305. So that is the difference there in general fund. In other funds, the amount is done down because we're not issuing COPs for additional construction. Therefore, there are no COP proceeds showing in other funds for that purpose. What was avoided with this was a plan.
Excuse me, Linda?
Mm-hmm.
Co-Chair Schrader?
Just trying to make sure I understand the general fund allocations, because even with and the subcommittee will probably get into more detail, but the projected change from 9901 to the desired 0103 was like a 13% increase, and what's happening now, we're seeing a 20% increase. But you say that's basically the reason for that huge difference is the one-time debt service savings that we took and now have to replace to actually fund the services, fund the jails and the housing of the prisoners.
Mr. Co-Chair, that's part of the reason. That explains about $50 million of the increase, because we found a little over 50 million in debt service savings in 0103 that were one time and have to be restored. The other change is to provide sufficient funding to house the rising prison population.
Mr. Co-Chair, sir. I just look back at the graph on the previous page, and it doesn't look like there's been an increase. If anything, it looks like things are leveling off, so I would assume the percentage allocation to the department would be somewhat similar to what was projected, you know, for last biennium.
The last, which page are you?
I just look at your page, slide 20, page 10, where you have that the graph where the exponential curve is starting to level off this biennium. So it just seemed odd that there'd be such a large increase in general fund allocation.
The average biennium to biennium inmate growth is 8.5% for 03-05, so it is still growing.
Okay. It just, the allocation is 20% increase. That just struck me as a little unusual. Okay.
Right, but part of that is the debt service.
Right.
Senator Harper, you have a question?
So the other, just on a straight percentage basis, that other 4% increase is debt service. That's where you'd find that.
Four.
There's a population growth of 16% and a general fund growth of 20%. So that other...
Co-Chair, Senator Harper, I can't do the percentage math in my head this quickly, but essentially there's $150 million dollars additional, and about 100 of that is to continue to incarcerate the population under the current statute, and the $50 million of it is restoring debt service.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Bates?
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Yes.
1,000
more prisoners.
That was the COP.
The other question, the mic would be helpful here, is the loss of other funds. I mean, on this graph, you have a significant loss of other funds.
Mr. Chairman,
Co-Chair's Representative Bates, that's correct. And the reason for that is that we will not be issuing certificates of participation, which would have provided a much higher level of other funds to spend on continued construction. But there's no construction in 0305, and that's why that dropped significantly.
No.
Well, that would seem to impact the amount of general funds you have to come up with to run your program. Am I reading it incorrectly for total funds?
Co-Chair Representative Bates, it doesn't have an impact on operations. It was only for capital construction.
Senator Carter, did you want to be recognized?
Yes,
Senator Gordon.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning.
Good morning.
What does the budget provide for staff training? Is there a reduction, or are we staying level?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Gordley, there was a reduction during 0103 in staff training from 2 weeks to 1 week. I am not certain if that other week got restored. That's something I'll have to get back to the panel with.
And one additional question, which goes back to a previous slide on the population. It would be helpful to know what the incidence of, this is related to health, what is the incidence of HIV, AIDS in the inmate population and the associated costs?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Gordley, we will get that information for you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
That was just a head shake when Senator Gordley asked the question if there were more dollars added for training, and there was a head shake in the back that said no, it wasn't.
It's one of those bobblehead things.
Yeah.
Senator Harper?
What's a fella to do, huh?
It answered the question.
This is for anybody. I have seen charts comparisons on costs, incarceration costs on a state-by-state comparison. Could somebody provide that to the committee, whoever can find it?
I need to.
Or if somebody on the committee has it. Because my question is, I understand that we are very high in a cost per prisoner basis, and I'd like to just see that comparison, see if that's true. If not, that may give us something to look at over the next couple of months on why that is. So, anybody?
Mr. Vice Chair, we will provide that for you.
Thank you.
We will hunt it for you.
Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, what is probably not the answer to Senator Parker's question, but I would guess that many states would not have the same experience as Oregon in that only a few of our institutions are quite old, and we have quite a few new institutions. So if you include the debt service as part of the cost, then your cost is going to be significantly higher per inmate. If you don't include it, it may not be. But many states... obviously, we have one institution that goes back, not to the previous century, but the century before that, portions of it.
You're talking about my home in my city?
Yes. But when you build all these new institutions, if you include the debt service in the cost per inmate, the cost is going to be very high. And I don't know if that's the explanation for it, but it might be good to look at that comparison by state, too.
I'm not looking for answers. I just want to ask the question just yet. We'll get answers in detail.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Winters.
While you're doing a comparison with states, would you also compare the medical costs as well? It would be nice to know what is being expended in other states, and also the age question that I asked earlier, whether determinate sentencing in Major 11 is really creating some capacity issues that includes both health and some of the other issues.
I want to thank the committee for their intense interest and simply observe that we're on slide 22 of 69.
Greater.
Please proceed.
Had a committee yesterday.
Yes, I know. That's why I made that statement.
Two other things I would point out on this slide. Federal funds is an estimate of what we believe would be coming for the state criminal alien assistance program. And finally, the last two lines show the average estimated prison population. And from the close of session forecast, there's an 8.5% increase in the expected prison population to 0305. And finally, in full-time equivalents, from the close of session 0103 to 0305, there's a 4.3% increase in full-time equivalents. And what we have here is a bar graph form of the information you just saw on the table. The only thing I would add is that there is an anomaly from 0103 that is not shown in this because it is an anomaly, and that is $250 million of other fund non-limited limitation that was given in order to refinance all of the COPs at a lower interest rate. We had to provide a limitation to run that money through. So it was in and it was out. This begins to discuss the reductions that have been taken in 0103 for the Department of Corrections. In general fund, the total through all of the special sessions and other actions was a little over $75 million. The bulk of that was $53 million in debt service. Those were good savings to find, but they are one-time savings, which means they have to be restored in the following biennium to continue to pay debt service. Beyond that, in institutions and programs, there were $8.4 million in reductions made. Some of these were one-time reductions for delaying hires or delaying the openings of certain beds or facilities. There was also a state hiring freeze, and there was specifically a reduction to work-based education programs. Permanent reductions came from finding a way to reduce food costs. There was a health care delivery reorganization that produced some savings. And there were reductions in cognitive restructuring and transitional services. In community corrections, the reductions totaled $10.4 million. $1 million of that was one time. It was a one-time inflation reduction. And finally, there was a $2.5 million reduction in administration and central support and operations. And that was 3.4% of the reductions. The following page will focus on exactly what was what the amounts were for House Bill 5100 in the fifth special session, as well as the reductions that have been taken in order to meet the reduced December forecast. From the fifth special session, the pro rata share for the Department of Corrections was $28.6 million. Of that amount, $12.6 million was in institutions, and that was done through additional savings in the healthcare delivery and program reductions and hiring freeze vacancy savings. I should say, as a preface to this, that originally plans were released to meet this $28 million reduction by releasing inmates, and that was to have begun on February 1st of this year. Governor Kulongoski requested a rework of that number to find a way to find the $28 million in savings without releasing inmates, and that's what this plan will show. There's a $5.1 million in reduction in administration and support areas. It's several positions in business and finance, inspections, human resources, and so forth. There is another $3.1 million reduction in construction costs that results in that much of a reduction to debt service commitment. And finally, in community corrections, there was a $7 million. There is a $7 million pro rata share of the $28 million reduction. The second part is $9.3 million.
Senator Schrader?
A quick question on when the governor made the adjustments to not release the prisoners from the Department of Corrections, did he alter any of the release expectations with regard to OIA or the community correction system?
Co-Chair Schrader, he did not. I'll be covering OIA next.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Forgive an ignorant question where I need some historical context. In talking about the reductions to community corrections, I have heard anecdotally about an agreement made with local government out of 1145, I think was the bill number, where there is at least the belief on the part of some local government that a contract or a set of expectations was achieved between state and local government, and that by virtue of the cuts and by virtue of some of the adjustments that were made, that the spirit, if not the substance, of that contract is not being upheld. Could you give a quick historical context so we can understand that?
Co-Chairs, Representative Johnson, as I understand it, Senate Bill 1145 provided for adequate funding and adequate inflation in order to manage the population as is produced in our population forecast that is expected to be at the local level. And I believe that is the contract that, that your constituents are probably referring to, and it is in statute. And it requires the legislature to provide that level of funding.
And so have the cuts been consistent with the statutory requirement to provide a fixed level of funding?
The cuts have been proportional to institution cuts. There's institutions and programs will take, they have X percent of the funding and they will take X percent of the cut, and community corrections has Y percent and they take Y percent of the cut. And all the way through, when there's been a cut for institutions and programs, there's been a proportional cut for community corrections.
Thank you.
Senator Carter.
Senator, can you tell me what is the, how does it look now with community corrections being cut? Is there still a transitional phase? How do those people come back into society having whatever kind of structure that is in place? Because I can imagine a lot of the, well, in the past, a lot of the problems we were having in Oregon is high incidences of recidivism. So how are we dealing with, what's the impact of the community corrections cut?
Co-Chair, Senator Carter, I'm going to, that's another one of these, we'll get back to you.
Okay.
It's a program issue that program people within the agency and within community corrections need to discuss with the panel.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Hanson-Niels. Senator Devlin.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the cuts in 1145 funding, SB 1145. The cuts that are made in this biennium and cuts are made administratively. You were comparing that to the cuts to the institutions, but is it true that the cuts to the 1145 are going to be ongoing in the next biennium, where the cuts to institutions are not going to be carried forward?
Co-Chair Senator Devlin, that is true.
Please proceed.
Oh, sorry, Mr.
You just...
I'm just making eyes.
Groaning.
Just making eyes at you, Mr.
This is the final Department of Corrections slide. It discusses the 03 governor's, 0305 governor's budget. It continues some of the permanent reductions that were identified earlier in 0103, such as reduced food costs, health care delivery, grants to communities, in answer to your question. It eliminates inflation on services and supplies, and it eliminates inflation to for provider COLAs as well, cost of living adjustments. It halts construction in 2003-05. There will be no further certificate of participation sales except for community corrections construction and prepayments, pre-spending that the Department of Corrections did for expected construction. And it does not biennialize the House Bill 5100 reductions. This is one of the few budgets that does not do that. And what that means is that no inmates are released before the end of their sentences, and inmates, this will be managed by housing in temporary emergency and county rental beds.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Could we get detail on the specific reductions in health care delivery? Not
Mr.
today, but later.
Senator Gordley, we can get more specific details for you, but I will say that the savings result from reorganizing the way health care is delivered. And an example would be that it turned out to be cheaper to have a dialysis inside the walls instead of transporting inmates outside two or three times a week for dialysis. It is less expensive to bring a doctor into an institution than it is to transport inmates outside of the institution to the doctor. And it's these kinds of organizational changes that have been made that have produced the savings. There has not specifically been a reduction in access to health care.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Senator Winters?
Just to follow up, and I can appreciate that you did some adjustments inside to realize the savings. But I, too, like Senator Gordley, would like to have a list of those adjustments that you made to realize those. I think they would be helpful as we go through this deliberation to understand what kinds of changes you made and what kinds of savings were resulted therein.
Representative Krieger.
Mr. Co-Chair, can you... compare the daily cost in your prison system compared to the cost of your emergency county and rental beds. Do we have a figure what you're paying for that separate?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Krieger. If I understand, one of the questions that came up earlier was a cost per day per by institution, because institutions have different costs depending on when they were built and how they have to be managed. Your question is by type of bed, general population versus intensive management bed, perhaps?
County, or you have to rent a bed for county or city for 3 weeks. What does that cost you per day compared to housing that person in your own institution?
Right. This will be another. We'll get back to you. Are we ready for OYA?
I think so. Remember, there is a subcommittee that will be looking at this budget.
We now move on to Oregon Youth Authority.
The chairman's actually here now.
Finally, a real leadership here.
This just shows the budget of organization. Community programs is a part of OYA that funds parole and probation officers for youth, foster care beds, residential treatment programs, and juvenile crime prevention grants. The facilities program consists of the actual buildings, Hillcrest, McLaren, five regional facilities, camps, transitional housing. Administration, of course, is agency direction, financial and business support, human resources, and information systems. OIA also has debt service for facilities, five regional facilities that were recently built, as well as an IT system for the juvenile justice information system. Capital improvement is for maintaining facilities and capital construction for replacement of facilities when that is feasible. This shows the 2003-05 budget general fund by program unit. The largest, of course, is the facilities at 53%. Community programs then is at 37%. Debt service, 5%. One thing I would point out is that there is zero for construction. There's also no further construction for OIA. There was a request for some. The budget history shows in general fund, first of all, the general fund is about 85% of the 0305 budget, and it is reduced in 0305, and I'll explain why in a minute. Other fund main sources are trust funds, such as child support, Social Security, and county detention when counties rent beds that are available at OIA facilities. Federal fund sources are for targeted case management. There's a federal match of about 20% for that, and for behavioral rehabilitation services, where there's about a 60%. I've also included percentage changes in general fund from close of session. It's down 12%, and the full-time equivalent count is down 24% from end of session. The next displays in bar chart form the page that we just saw. General fund trends down as much as it does because, unlike corrections, OIA services are not mandated by statute and with sentences. Youth are committed to facilities. They are not sentenced with determinate sentences to facilities. And that provides a lot more flexibility in when they're released. And so the forecast is not a driver in the same way that the forecast for corrections, for adult corrections, is a driver. This slide shows reductions that have been made in 2001-03. The second special session had a combination of one-time and permanent reductions. One of the permanent reductions was a refinancing of certificates of participation, and there were also some changes in federal funds, trust increases, match rate increase. One times were mostly delays in hiring nurses, information technology staff, delays in opening beds. In the third special session, the reason it's a positive number is because it was during that period that the compensation plan was funded at about three-quarters of the level that it needed, and there were virtually no other reductions made. In the fifth special session, there was $7.8 million reduction. 4.7 of that was in facilities, and this is where we begin to see closures. This closes four regional facilities, which leaves three close custody facilities, Hillcrest, McLaren, and the Rogue Valley facility. It eliminates 250 beds in those facilities, which leaves a little over 800 beds that are funded, and it eliminates 269 positions. In community programs, there was a reduction of $3.1 million, and that eliminated foster care beds, shelter care beds, residential beds, 22 parole and probation positions. It eliminates treatment and support services for about 200 youth, and there's also a reduction to juvenile crime prevention grants. Finally, in the December revenue forecast reduction, this is $2.6 million for the agency, and most of that has come from one-time reductions resulting from the state hiring freeze. The last slide shows the 2003-05 governor's budget. This continues basically the House Bill 5100 reductions. It continues the elimination of the 250 beds in the four regional facilities. It continues parole and probation reductions and some alcohol and drug treatment reductions, foster care reductions, and also juvenile crime prevention grant reductions. As an aside, I will note that in 1999, these grants were targeted to total $30 million in combination from Criminal Justice Commission and OYA, and they are now between the two agencies at a total of about $18 million. Finally, there is a reduction of provider COLAs and inflation on services and supplies consistent with other large agencies. Questions?
Question, Senator Burr.
If you don't mind my returning to fund questions in terms of savings in the OSP system, when you look at staffing patterns in terms of savings cost on the medical side, how often do we use RNs in terms of the work that they can do versus using doctors? It appears to me some cost savings would be in that area as well.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Carter, we will find out.
Okay. And then find out also for me the cost relationship between nurses on the inside versus those inside of the prison, the work inside the prison, versus those that are in mainstream society, the mainstream hospitals or other places. It's comparable.
Right.
One other question, Mr. Chairman. In terms of OYA, can you tell me the economic profile of the medical cost in OYA versus that be in an adult system, and how does that cost compare?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Carter, we can get that. We actually have that as part of their cost per day calculation in each.
Thank you.
So we'll get that for you.
Representative Johnson has a question also, Linda.
Has a calculation been done for the mothballing costs of the four regional facilities?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Johnson, it is part of the reduction. The reduction number we see here is net of mothballing costs.
Thank you.
It is now my pleasure to introduce my colleague, Mr. Bill McGee, who will continue with
the question. Richard, you never have a quick question.
This is a very quick question.
All right, Senator Devlin, for your quick question.
In the closure of the four regional facilities, are any of those regional facilities currently have beds being rented by counties? And if so, has any arranged, do we know what's going to happen in terms of those agreements with counties?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Devlin, yes, there are two facilities that have county detention beds. They each have 20. The counties on average use 14. And there are discussions underway of what or how to deal with this.
That's a very good question.
Mr. Chair.
Can't hear you.
Mr. Chair, I've just got a froggy voice this morning. I'm sorry.
Senator White, excuse me. Go ahead.
But I do have one question. Someone talked about mothballing, and I don't know whether it'll come into this presentation, but somewhere where we do have inventories of lands on the books, and what's by corrections, and what's the process of converting that land into assets. Or getting it on tax rolls, and I don't know whether it's going to come up in your discussion in your subcommittee, but I'm thinking specifically out by OSCI and some of those properties, and what's the plan of OCI of the division to deal with those pieces of properties.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, Bill McGee from Gas Budget Management. There is planning going on around that property. I believe we're talking about the farm annex property, a piece of which has been allocated to the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training for a new training academy. We'll talk about that. the rest of the property is to be divided by statute between the department's uses and funds for the Cultural Trust Fund. And I think you heard a report of the emergency board last time on that, and I'm sure it'll be discussed again in subcommittee. If I may. Good morning, and we'll start with the Department of State Police budget. And first of all, just the organizational structure of the department. The first few offices here are the uniformed portions of the department, the Post Patrol Services Division, the Criminal Investigation Division with the Office of Public Safety and Security, which is the department's Homeland Security operation, Fish and Wildlife Enforcement Division, the Gaming Division, which includes the Boxing and Wrestling Commission. Then the two divisions that perform scientific analysis for the public safety system, the Forensic Services Division and the Medical Examiners Division. On the primarily non-sworn side, Oregon Emergency Management coordinates preparation for and response to natural disasters throughout the state. State Fire Marshal provides education, a variety of other services related to fire prevention, fire response, manages the Conflagration Act to fight fires, structural fires. Criminal Justice Services Division manages the very large amount of federal funds the state receives for various law enforcement, drug treatment, some prison construction funding, a wide variety of different federal dollars. The Office of Information Management contains the Law Enforcement Data System, or LEDS, the Identification Section that does fingerprint and other ID services for the law enforcement system, and the department's wireless communication system, including its mountaintop repeaters that connect the dispatch centers. Finally, the Human Services Division includes the administration of the agency, the regional dispatch centers, and then the agency's training operation. The next slide shows you what the budget history is, with a reduction in general fund and a pretty much leveling of total funds, mostly because of projected increases in the federal funds piece, and a reduction in personnel, which we'll go over in some detail as we continue the presentation. The next slide just shows you the same information in a graphics format, again showing the decline of the general fund and pretty much leveling off since this special session. This gives you a better sense of where the budget is divided in the governor's budget. 43% of the department's budget is federal funds. Lottery is 1%. As Mr. Wilson indicated, that entirely goes to the Fish and Wildlife Enforcement Division. That's Measure 66 lottery dollars for Oregon plan activities primarily. Other funds, 33%, includes a broad set of categories. The 911 piece is that supports, goes to the local government to support the development and operation of 911 centers, is the largest piece of that. There's also different contracts and services with other agencies, different funding sources, the fire marshal, criminal fines assessment account, a variety of different kinds of other funds. Federal funds are primarily the grants from the Department of U.S. Department of Justice. The federal funds non-limited are primarily federal emergency management agency funds that help us prepare for and respond to disasters. The next slide shows you the division of the general fund in the agency among the different units. Patrol Services is 45%, the largest. Human Services, which now includes the dispatch centers as well as administration and training, is 21%. Criminal Investigations, 14%, and then the other divisions, smaller percentages we go through.
Mr. Chair.
Question, Senator Messer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regards to the Fish and Wildlife game officers, those personnel are very highly trained in identification of game and a lot of the laws that are unique to, as opposed to what the patrolmen are. Is it true, and my understanding, that as the state police are reducing their forces, a lot of the forces, individuals being reduced, are the game officers, but they're being replaced with patrol officers who have not had this training? And I'm concerned because the funding for those game officers is dedicated funds from ballot measure 66 and other sources. Is there anything in the budget that will train the patrolmen who are moving to the game division?
Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, you're correct. The layoffs that will occur in the current biennium, Measure 28, is not adopted and continuing in the next biennium, by contract, have to operate on a seniority basis, from the most senior officers being laid off last to the more current officers. And you're correct that there is a higher percentage of fish and wildlife officers who are at the lower end of the seniority list, so you will see some a greater disparity there. The department will train those officers in new functions as they're transferred to it. How quickly they pick up that experience, I couldn't tell you, but they certainly will provide whatever training they can at the level of funding that, that exists to do that.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair. I've had the opportunity to meet with six officers from down the South Coast who will be laid off. They indicated to me that there is $7.5 million that the state has paid to train them. Now, whether that was all in Game Division, I don't know, but my guess is that there's a considerable amount of money. And I guess my additional question to you would be, is the department going to absorb that, or is that being budgeted someplace?
Mr. Chair, Senator Mezzo, I haven't seen as the specific cost in terms of training of individual officers. That seems high to me for six officers, and I suspect that that would be over a significant number of years rather than just initially. There is no offset in the budget to increase the training unit in order to do reductions. There are some cuts in training as well. So that would be something that the department would need to manage.
Thank you.
Thank you. Continue.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that little cut for the lottery funds, where would we find the lottery funding that goes to the state police for lottery security issues? Is that another fund? Or?
That would be another fund. That's a separate contract with the Lottery Administration. Where I belong. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gorgon.
Thank you. Mr. McGee, looking at the Oregon Emergency Management portion of the illustration leads me to ask a question about our overall preparation for managing disasters.
Mm-hmm.
Can we say that in the overall public safety budget that there are enhancements that leave us better prepared to handle a given disaster?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I guess the answer is yes and no. The yes is probably true in that the state's new emergency coordination facility in Salem at the corner of State and Hawthorne that you may have seen, and I think the department would be more than happy to take the members of the committee, the subcommittee, on a tour of that, is in the process of opening, and the Emergency Management Division will move into that facility, I believe, next month. And that is a significant upgrade on the state's, not just this, that division, but the state's overall ability to manage disasters. And the budget does fund the cost of moving them in and paying the rent that then goes back to DAS to pay for the COPs to build that facility. So in that sense, I think it is true that we have a better infrastructure from a facility standpoint. The number of positions in emergency management has declined in the budget from 34 to 32. That's not very significant, but the reductions, one of those positions is one of the folks who is responsible for maintaining the state's disaster plan, and that's a loss. The other works on tsunami and earthquake issues and supports the seismic committee that I can't recall the name of, the seismic committee the legislature established last biennium. Even with those reductions, though, I suspect that we are very thin in that agency. There are a lot of folks who have multiple tasks to do and perhaps don't have as much time as we would prefer to have them do all their tasks. It is also true that the state does not have a disaster fund that a number of states are doing, a set aside of money that are used to assist with helping recover in disasters. And the FEMA is moving more in the direction of requiring that the states to participate more in those costs in order to continue to receive funds for disaster recovery. So I think the answer, to shortly get back again, is that there's a yes and a no.
Thank you.
President Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was very helpful in your response about the specific disaster and the breakdown there.
Could you provide to the committee a breakdown for how the reductions will affect the forensics labs as well, specifically?
We'll talk about that a little bit more, but we will have some information.
Okay, thank you.
The next slide is the total funds budget, again, by the different divisions. You see it changes very differently. The patrol services now, which is primarily general fund, drops to 22%. Emergency management, once we add the 911 funds that go through their unit and the FEMA money that go through their unit, now increased to 25%. Criminal Justice Services Division, which is essentially manages federal grants, increased to 14%. So there's a very different picture of how the dollars are divided when you compare the general fund to the total funds budget.
I think Representative Krieger had a question.
Yeah, Bill. I'll take it back just a second to the Fish and Wildlife Division. Of those federal funds, the game division, which, you know, I was there a while, and ESA issues, so Federal Fish and Wildlife, National Marine Fisheries Service, how much federal money is coming to either the Department of Fish and Wildlife or the department direct to fund that portion of the work? Because I know a large part of our work has to do around that and also the Oregon plan that they're enforcing.
We will need to get back to you on the information regarding what the Department of Fish and Wildlife received from that. The total federal funds received in the Fish and Wildlife Division in this budget is about $943,000. So coming to the state police, it's a fairly small amount of money, but we'll have to get back to you on the details for the
Mr. Chair?
Fish and Wildlife.
Continue.
Just a comment, maybe. If you take a traffic officer who's been trained in traffic and he hasn't got, and he's bringing him up years, that he was not a fisherman, he was not involved in natural resources as so many of our young people were in Oregon years ago, when a high percentage of our people that came on the department came from Oregon. That's not always so now. They're coming from all over. You take a person who's from Milwaukee Patrol Division, and he was assigned to Gold Beach Fish and Wildlife, and the first day he goes out in the ocean, gets seasick for 6 hours. All of a sudden, he doesn't want to do that enforcement. What I saw when we did use some of the traffic fellows years ago, they were very ineffective. They didn't like what they were doing, and the work ethic drops off, and they don't become dedicated to what they're doing. I had 5.5 years of uncompensated overtime when I left the department because I was concerned about the resource that I was trying to protect. You lose that when you don't have dedicated people in a certain division.
The next slide shows you how the dollars are distributed among categories. 72% of the general fund goes to personal services. So it's...
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, just a request, actually. Can I get numbers for whether or not the number of retirees has increased in the department's foreign staff over previous years?
The number of retirees that they're using?
The number of retirements, if it's actually increased.
Retirements. That is true. We'll get to the numbers. Over about a six-year period, I think the department is expecting about 50% of their sworn staff to retire. So we are, I think, moving to the end of what was a very significant period of retirement for the department.
And follow up, can I also get the number of sworn officers that are within 2 years of retirement and the number of sworn officers that are already over the minimum number of years that you can retire at as a PERS member?
We will get that same thing. Again, the distribution of the general fund, almost three-quarters of the general fund budget goes to personal services, so it's primarily a people-driven agency. 25% for services and supplies. Capital outlay is 2% of the budget. There's a significant reduction as a result of the actions during the special sessions. The general fund budget for Department of State Police has been reduced by over half in capital outlay. And that affects their ability to purchase cars, get computers, replace forensics equipment, and sort of all the hard, large expenditure purchases. Total funds, the personal services are down to 44%, and special payments come in at 36%. And those are primarily the 911 dollars that go to local governments and FEMA dollars that go to governments for disaster planning and response as well. Okay. Quickly, I'll do a major overview of the components in the governor's budget and then give you some more detail as we move forward. The fifth special session reductions are largely continued in 2003-2005. While the governor's budget does restore 40 troopers and adds back positions to continue operation of the Bend Forensics Lab. Sworn officers are reduced from 807 to 635, and I'll have a graphic in a minute to show you the impact of different divisions in the sworn strength. Patrol troopers are reduced from 461 to 329. The forensics lab capacity is reduced by about 60% from current year levels. So even without factoring growth, and we've seen it in growth in the number of submissions from local government, we would only be able to do about 40% of the submissions that we currently are receiving. There are also significant reductions in dispatch, information systems, LEDs, administration, and training that impact the department's ability really to function. The department has indicated that there are a number of areas where they may, at this budget level, be required to ask sworn officers to take up the type of duties now with currently being done by non-sworn personnel. The budget includes funds to open a new forensics lab and medical examiner's office in Portland. That property had already been purchased earlier in this current biennium, so we are basically providing money to pay the debt service on the COPs and to issue new COPs to equip the new facility. The medical examiner's office in Portland is currently in a 1920s era funeral home, which you pretty much can walk off the street into the autopsy room, and it is a significant health risk for employees and visitors. The Portland Forensics Lab also has some issues regarding circulation of air for the health and safety of the employees. And it's also owned by the Portland Police Bureau, who's told us a number of years ago they would like us to vacate. So this is one of the few construction projects. It's actually not a construction project. We bought the facility. We're remodeling it. It's one of the few facilities projects you'll see in this budget because it is a critical health and safety issue, and we already bought it. The department will talk to you about reorganization of several programs and divisions that are pretty much a net zero, but it's moving around some of the boxes to try and make the organization function a little bit better. And there also is a legislative concept that will continue operation of the state fire marshal and the arson investigation program. Complicated explanation, I won't go into now, but the major funding source for that fire insurance premium tax is because of some vagaries in Oregon's tax law, may disappear or nearly disappear for pretty much the remainder of the decade, actually. So there's a problem there, and we'll have a legislative concept to try and continue that.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Dukes, and then Senator Messick.
I probably missed something along the way, but wherever we just were, that slide you had, says patrol troopers reduced from 461 to 329. Yeah. Is that on top of the Measure 28?
That is including the Measure 28. That is, the governor's budget continues the Measure 28 as its current law and just assumes those reductions would continue in the next biennium. So that nets all those actions. As I said, there's some reorganizations here as well that also moved officers from one division to another. So the reduction really is in real terms greater than the net numbers show, and that's something we would spend some time with the subcommittee kind of really getting into some of the details.
So how many more state police are we losing in this budget over the 103 with
this slide 28? Shows the history of the sworn officers over time.
Okay.
Going back to 1979, 1981, at which point the voters removed state police from the gas tax. And as you see from the bottom darker blue section, at that point we had 665 officers in patrol. That bumped around in the mid-500s for a while, got to the low-500s, dropped into the 400s, and now between the close of session budget which to the governor's budget would drop from 461 to 329. And the impact of that primarily is the Measure 28 cuts. There are some loss of federal fund issues as well that impact that, but primarily it's the Measure 28
cuts.
You see the Fish and Wildlife Division has stayed pretty stable for most of this period of time, but dropped now to 107 in the government budget. Criminal and investigation dropped to 113. There are a lot of officers that were moved from other divisions, so the reduction really is greater there. There are actually about 25 detectives that were eliminated as a reduction in Measure 28. About. And then the remainder of sworn officers in other divisions drops to 86. So that leaves us with 635 total for the department. It's down from 807 in your post-session budgets.
Whoa.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have two questions now. that one that you were mentioning earlier on the crime labs, the service to communities and city and sheriff's departments with the closing of the crime labs in rural Oregon has created some real problems, not only in the safety of the evidence when there's a crime committed, but in the training of the different departments and just the contact. Somewhere along the way, during the special sessions, we were told that there was going to be training and education for those crime labs. I don't see anything in this budget or any discussion of how the department is going to cover that and fulfill that need in the community.
Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, this slide takes us to the non-sworn position, changes from the close of session budget to the governor's budget. And the first bars to the left show you what the change in the forensics unit is, and that went from the lab system will go from about 91 positions, non-sworn positions, down to about 22.
Mr. Chair, the question was, how is the department going to budget to train those folks with
the thank you. That was, Mr. Chair, the discussion you are remembering was one that the department had after, I believe, the second special session when it talked about closure of the rural crime labs. That conversation happened before the Senate Bill 5100 cuts in the fifth special session, in which there was a 6.5% reduction taken by the legislature in the forensics, specifically in the forensics budget. The department's commitment to train local evidence collection technicians to replace those forensics lab was really occurred at the time that we were not looking at virtually eliminating almost all of the non-sworn positions. There was no additional funds added back to do any more local training. I'm not sure quite how we will manage that with the small number of folks that we still have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could have a follow-up and ask my second question. As you look at the drafts on the sworn positions, one issue that's bothered me since I've been a legislator, I guess, is that we've never seen a good picture of what is the total law enforcement in communities. And I'm speaking of the cities and the counties, county sheriff's departments, plus the state police. And the concern is that we don't get a picture of how are the citizens being protected. For instance, in my communities, at least, the state police, I believe, after 8 o'clock at night, do not provide service unless it's a special event. And so we don't have a picture, and I think there is confusion on who has authority to do what types of crime work. Is there any information that could clarify that for us so that, you know, so we're losing so many state patrolmen, state officers? How do we backfill that? How are the communities protected?
Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, there is information available. I don't know that it would be forward, but we have some in the recent years as to the number of city and county officers, and we can get that for you. The department negotiated cooperative policing agreements with virtually every county in the state prior to these budget reductions. I don't know that they've had the opportunity to sit down and renegotiate those and have those conversations. I think that is something that your subcommittee would need to address through testimony, both from the department and from local law enforcement, who I suspect would be available to have those conversations.
Just a quick comment, Mr.
Just
Chair.
Last follow-up, I believe, is that correct?
It would be very helpful if we knew how this is going to be impacted moving forward with these kind of adjustments.
I think that would be something we would be talking to you in the subcommittee.
Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes.
A quick question for information later.
Okay.
On the forensic labs, I was actually a county medical examiner for quite a long time, and we relied heavily on how the evidence was collected and that it was not contaminated, it was done properly, and then getting information back to the labs. Frankly, I don't see how we're not going to have a huge backlog of forensic evidence waiting for cases to be prosecuted at the local levels or the other level without this information coming forward. What I'd like to have is an idea of what that waiting list backlog will look like with these cuts, how long people will be waiting for DNA and other evidence to come back, and are you seeing an increased difficulty with contaminated evidence that can't be used in court, and then we lose prosecutions. I'm concerned about both those issues because I think they're going to be very major when you make these kind of cuts. And we're going to be looking at cases that will be gone and not properly prosecuted and people let back out in the streets that I think are really dangerous to us.
Mr. Representative Bates, the department is having conversations with its local partners on how best to manage with the limited resources they would have in the budget. Clearly, there would be an attempt to triage cases and deal with things that have the most immediate public safety impacts, the most sensitive time frames for investigation and prosecution, but you're absolutely right. There would be some very significant impacts, and the backlog would increase significantly. We'll provide you the best information we can on those. I'm not sure how far the planning has gone to be able to project forward, but we'll give you the best we can.
Quick follow-up. I thought you had a great idea. That should not be hard to gather. You know how much time it takes to process the evidence now. You should be able to see what it takes after these cuts occur.
Yeah, there's some stuff we can give you.
Thanks.
Representative Smith, GM.
Can you tell me, is the new Portland Forensic Lab, is that located within a distressed community within the city?
I'll have to get back to you. I don't know the economic condition of the specific area.
Just a comment to our committee. I think it's important as we're looking at the minutiae of budgets that we also keep in mind the big picture. And we're going to be spending hundreds of millions of dollars on economic development. I think it's important that we look for those opportunities to help out distressed communities, and many times the location of a project such as this in a community that could use this type of infrastructure, these type of jobs, even if it's only secondary benefits derived to the distressed community, we should be keeping them.
Mr. Representative Smith, the location of that facility was chosen in large part to make it accessible for the local law enforcement to essentially to bring bodies to the medical examiner's office, to be able to have local law enforcement bring forensics evidence there for investigation, and to try and sort of minimize the cost. It was also done to continue the relationship we have with Multnomah County, and I believe to add a similar relationship to Clackamas and Washington counties, where they provide staff to the medical examiner, clerical staff, investigators, who in fact work with our medical examiner and help us avoid hiring staff that we would otherwise need to be if they were further removed. So we also have bought the facility. So.
Quick observation. Last session I served on the Economic Development Ways and Means Subcommittee, and over we heard what I would call excuses. I think it's important that if there's an opportunity for us to move a facility 4 or 5 miles down the road to support a community's main street, to help out a community, we should be looking for those opportunities. And whether it's in the city of Portland or Salem or Scappoose, I think we need to be looking for those opportunities.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wardley and then Senator Carter.
Right. I really appreciate Representative Smith's observation and question. The existing medical examiner's office in Portland is in a distressed community, and in fact it is about a block from a main street, which would be Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Now, in terms of the location that's being developed, that's a question mark for me too, but you raise a very, very key point.
Senator Carter, please.
I was going to say ditto to Representative Smith, because I think it is very, very important that state agencies look at what is good and what is consistent for them in terms of them having better access. But if indeed economic development is an issue for us in this state, we have to take what distressed communities are. And I'm not saying this to you. I'm saying it to us as a committee, that is something we need to be on top of. And if we're going to walk the walk, we need to do the talk. And if economic development is an issue for us in this state, then when state agencies locate, it's not a matter of locating it for the convenience of workers or anybody else, but for where distressed communities are.
Senator Dukes, you have.
Did I get to follow that? Okay, I'm confused. Now, some days it doesn't take a lot, but you got. Looking at your budget numbers, they haven't changed much between 0103 and 0305. I mean, they've gone down a little, but not a lot. But we're cutting more sworn troopers. I'm confused.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I'm going to get to that shortly.
Okay.
Thanks. before we move forward, and I'll try to go more quickly here because we've got more slides and you have time, I think, still. But the non-sworn side, there are a couple other things quickly I'd like to highlight, and that's there's been a great deal of attention paid to the sworn reductions. The non-sworn reductions here are also very significant. They're going to potentially impact the department's ability to function. Information systems positions have decreased from 42 to 10. Administration, 103 to 58. Dispatch, 109 to 80. LEDs, 25 to 16. And identification section, 81 to 67. So as they come forward to your subcommittee, I think we need to give you some information on what those impacts to this agency would be as well. My next slide was a couple of slides. We're going to take you from the close of session budget through the fifth special session. Very quickly, these are the reductions that occurred. The recruit school was canceled for January 23rd with eliminating 43 officers. Additional positions, the remaining King Air aircraft was to be sold. Significant reductions in service and supplies and capital outlays and some one-time administrative cuts. Third special session eliminated seven managers, made additional cuts to service and supplies and capital outlays, funded compensation at 75% for the department to absorb the other 25%, and gave about $500,000 for additional forensics costs. The fifth special session, a couple of specific reductions to reduce service and supplies and capital outlay again, made some administrative reductions. And then the ballot measure 28 cuts of 3.5% ended up eliminating 104 sworn, one non-sworn patrol positions, six sworn fish and wildlife, 25 sworn criminal investigation positions, four sworn and 95 non-sworn forensics positions and closure of the rural labs, and about 86 additional positions for the remainder of the department. The administrative rule reductions that related to the last economic forecast would require another 1.4% reduction from close of session, which would eliminate another 31 sworn positions, 8 of which are cadets, and eliminate additional 28 non-sworn positions in dispatch administration. That takes you through the close of session. The next slide will get to Senator Duke's question, I hope, to talk about really what this means to the development of the governor's budget. The reductions that occurred in the second, third, and fifth special sessions, when rolled forward to 03-05, reduced the budget by almost $53 million, so a net reduction. There's about a $36 million of increased expenditures. Part of that with a roll-up of position actions and compensation increases in the 0103 biennium, which was $15.8 million. There was a rebalance that was approved by the Emergency Board in October 2002 that had a roll-up of $3.2 million. Inflation state government service charges went up by $9 million, and that's primarily the liability charges to the department went up very significantly. The governor restored 40 sworn patrol positions, $5.5 million, restored the Bend Forensics Lab, $0.9 million, and as we talked about, the Portland Forensics Lab Medical Examiner Office of $1.7 million. So the difference between the dollars and the positions are really the cuts of $53 million are to some extent masked by some of the additional costs and the add-backs, kind of getting you to your net change from close of session to the governor's balance.
Question? Senator?
I thought I understood just in the press release that the governor did not include compensation increases and inflation.
Mr. Senator Harper,
what exactly?
Harper, that you're correct. The difference is the cost of compensation that from this biennium, increases that have already been negotiated in 0103 have roll-up costs in 0305 because if a 2% is given halfway through the biennium, it's going to cost more in 0305 than it costs in 0103.
Okay, that's.
But there are no new compensation increases that would occur in 0305.
Okay, how about inflation?
Inflation was primarily taken for agencies that make provider payments to local government or service providers. And if an agency had that case, their own inflation was taken away. Inflation for state agencies that didn't have that was not necessarily reduced.
So we'll find mixes and matches as we go through.
The issue is whether we're giving money to providers and local government for compensation increases. If we are, we take the agency's inflation as long as the inflation that we would be providing to the partners. If we're not, we didn't take the inflation.
So that's the methodology the subs need to be watching. Yeah. Okay.
But the main issue here really is the liability increase was, I think, about $7 million for state police through results in tort claims that occurred.
Mr. Chair?
Question, Senator Dukes.
In the past, when we've cut or eliminated employment compensation increases for the state police, we've ended up in binding arbitration and we've lost. Are those conversations going on in the governor's office?
We are discussing the nature of how we will bargain with state agencies. I'm not sure what point we are specifically in the bargaining process with the State Police Association, but ultimately it is an arbitration situation. So clearly one of the issues that raise in arbitration is the state's ability to pay, and I'm sure that will be an issue here. But okay, quickly, the other funds and federal funds, I won't spend much time on this. Reductions, there's some revenue shortfalls here the committee will want to spend some time on. There's some one-time costs that disappear. The roll-up of current biennium compensation issues for next biennium. Inflation, say, government service charges. Certificates of participation to buy equipment to open the new forensics and medical examiner lab in Portland. 911 revenues are expected to increase, and I talked briefly about the legislative concept related to the fire marshal and earth investigations programs. And that would be all I had for state police. If there are no other questions, I'll move on to BPSST.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Krieger.
Getting back to Senator Devlin, where he was going about the length of time and when officers were going to be retiring, I think that maybe from having been there, the department has, over recent time, lost the infrastructure of age classes of officers. When I was there, rarely did you see someone that had less than 8 or 10 years of service training a recruit. And what's happening now, you're finding people that have been out in the field maybe a year and a half to 3 years training a recruit. They have not even learned themselves. They have not totally developed themselves. And the efficiency of that officer, I'm seeing it in my area, drop off. It takes time. And I think that's something we're going to lose. And also, that's compounded by the fact that our cities and counties, especially in rural Oregon, are losing staff also. And the same thing, less experience. So we don't have it's not the quality of the people, it's the quality of the experience in the officer over time. And we're losing that across the state in many agencies.
Can you tell me where the new forensic lab is going to be located at?
Let me get back to you. I'm just not.
Thank you. Okay.
Quickly, a few issues on the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, because there are some policy issues here. The department is responsible for standards and certification and accreditation of public safety professionals in a variety of areas, law enforcement, corrections, parole and probation, telecommunications, firefighting, and private security. They provide training currently at the Public Safety Academy at Monmouth, at the grounds of the Western Oregon University. They also coordinate training to professional and volunteer firefighters throughout the state on a regional basis. And they staff the Public Safety Memorial Fund that provides compensation to families of officers who were killed or permanently disabled on duty. The budget here, it's an other funds budget, reduces pretty significantly from closing session. It is primarily funded with criminal fines and assessment account revenue, and I'll speak to that as a separate topic in just a moment. But that revenue is declining. As a result, there are some, is just the presentation of the budget over time, there are some policy choices here. Most of the budget goes to the criminal justice standards and training. That's basically law enforcement, parole and probation, corrections officers, telecommunications. Fire standards is about 7%, private security, which is entirely fee-based, 5%, and then the Public Safety Memorial Fund. That's about 1% of the budget. 57% of the budget goes to personal services, 39% services and supplies, small amount for debt service, and a small amount for special payments for the Public Safety Memorial Fund. The major components of the budget are that the criminal justice programs are reduced by 15 positions due to a shortfall in the criminal fines and assessment account revenue next biennium, and I'll spend some time on that in a second.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Winters. Oh, excuse me. Representative Johnson.
I was just getting
Mr. Chair, one of the things that comes as a little bit of a surprise is the reduction in the criminal fines and assessments. I've sat through a number of hearings discussing the construction of the new facility, mm-hmm. and repeatedly was assured that there would be adequate funds to pay for this new $75 million facility, and that there were no problems about revenue, and now suddenly comes the news that the principal source of funding for the whole agency is declining. How did that help me with the timing? Help me understand how.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, as we have continued to get updates from the Judicial Department and the Department of Revenue, I think some of the factors that have impacted the general fund budget, which has accelerated as we've gone through the interim, have accelerated here as well. And I would have liked to have had some better estimates at an earlier point of view, but we have some very imprecise revenue methodologies for this revenue source, and kind of the information we got came in later than we had hoped.
I just would say as a follow-on, if the imprecision in the revenue forecasting is a fact, that fact is not a new fact. And prior to the breathtaking expenditure of money in the discussion about the siting of that new facility, and re-engineering the farm site and all the rest of that, it would have been nice to know how imprecise this was before we embarked on a trail towards a $75 million building.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I agree with you. Historically, this revenue source has continued to increase. This is a new development that it's started to go down significantly, and I think a lot of folks expected that it would have recovered. There were some issues that occurred in the last session. The Senate Bill 70 modified how revenues were collected, what went into the CFA, what went out, how the Judicial Department would charge its cost against the CFAA. And I think it took us a part of the session to really understand how those dynamics, some of which were for some change in the methodologies, which is how the money was collected and distributed, took us longer in the biennium to find out than we would have liked to. But I agree would have been nicer to know earlier.
I think Representative Patrick has a question, Bill.
Bill, we've worked a lot on CFAA together. I guess my concern is, in going back to the judicial budget and the shutdown of the court, that hasn't been taken into account in any of the revenue forecasting to pay for DPSST or the local Child Advocacy Center's CAMI money.
Mm-hmm.
If we shut the court down for 20% of the time, I'm concerned with what kind of effect gas feels like, what's the roll-up costs that are going to have on DPSST, our local child abuse centers, all those kinds of things that are pretty much exclusively funded out of CAMI, and how that looks, because that's not taken any of the budgets I've seen. Nobody's talking about that impact. We're cutting off that revenue source, which is a fairly significant revenue source, though it's not meeting the expectation. Can you discuss that?
I've got some slides on CFA coming shortly.
Okay.
But also the impact on law enforcement. If officers are not writing tickets and arresting folks, that could be as well.
Right.
I'll cop out and say DAS doesn't do that forecast. The Judicial Department does their part. The Department of Revenue does the part for the circuit and justice courts. So we essentially get their information. But I think you're right. I don't think we know how to estimate that. These are uncharted territories. And clearly there's a potential for an impact that we don't know yet. Perfect. But I agree with you on that. The other piece, and sort of responding to Representative Johnson's concern, is given the reduction in the revenue source for this, the governor has put a hold on construction of the new academy, avoiding $7.8 million in debt service next biennium, delaying expansion of the basic police training course to 16 weeks. He would expect some additional conversation in the public safety area with the subcommittee on what the role of a new academy would be under a new system with reduced resources, and I think is open to having a conversation whether there would be a need to at some point not wait a full 2 years to move this forward, because there are costs obviously of delaying construction for a period of time to decommission a project team and recommission. But currently this budget does not have resources in it to build the facility at this point. Again, I want to move forward on time here.
I guess I'll point out to me we have 15 minutes to discuss the Department of Justice, the Judicial Department, and the rest of the CFAA. So we
hold your questions.
We can either hold. It's up to what the committee wants. We can either hold our questions, write them down, make sure
Representative Patridge and Bill get the questions, or if some of you would like to stay afterwards, I'm sure we can find someone to continue to go with the gavel.
Senator Miller suggests.
Is there a desire?
We meet tomorrow at 4 o'clock to finish up the questions.
No. Yeah, right.
Is it okay to write down the questions? Would that be a wishes of the committee?
Yeah.
I got some of them written down.
Okay. Right.
I will talk after.
Continue then.
The third and fourth bullets here refer to the fire insurance premium tax issue I mentioned before regarding the state fire marshal, so we've kind of covered that. That's a significant revenue issue for this program as well. And to deal with the shortfall in CFAA, we have eliminated a new allocation for the Public Safety Memorial Fund, so the 2003-05 expenditure limitation would be limited to what's available in carryover dollars from the current biennium. Now, criminal fines and assessment account. Quick background, those dollars come from fines and assessments paid by folks who are convicted of violations and crimes, including the unitary assessment. House Bill 2877, last biennium, changed how those funds would be allocated. Previously, there were statutory distributions, percentages, and caps. Now, you will pretty much decide how this revenue source is expended entirely through the budget process. The first decision is what percentage will you allocate to the general fund, as opposed to what percentage you allocate to the public safety fund that then supports programs such as DPSST, the CAMU program, others. This biennium, that split was 70.35% to the general fund, 29.65% to the public safety fund. You'll determine that split. The funds that go into the public safety account are distributed in priority order. First priority is public safety standard training and facilities. Second is criminal injuries compensation, assistance to victims of crimes and children reasonably suspected of being victims of crimes, and third to the programs under the emergency medical instruction account that was adopted in the 1999 session. The governor's budget retains the 70-30 split between general fund and public safety funds. And the reason for that was to change that split would essentially have a general fund impact because it would reduce the amount of money that would go into the general fund, reduce the amount of money that would be available to fund those programs that are traditionally funded with general fund resources. A quick list of the programs that are funded out of the CFA revenues. For DPSST, we talked about the criminal justice operations, debt service on the new facility, and the public safety memorial fund. State police receives a distribution of this as part of their training budget. Department of Justice received several programs, the criminal injuries compensation account and related child abuse medical examinations. The child abuse multidisciplinary intervention account, or CAMI, regional assessment centers. Department of Human Services receives funds for the domestic violence fund, the sexual assault victims fund, emergency medical services and trauma systems. And Oregon Health Sciences University receives distributions for rural area emergency medical services, area health education center, and a distribution to the Oregon Poison Center. This is what's happened to the revenue since the close of session. You'll see we estimated about $124 million of revenue then. We now estimate this biennium will be down to about $108 million. We estimate next biennium will be down to about $104 million. And the distribution, the blue, is what we expect to receive from the circuit courts and the red from the municipal and justice courts. And as Representative Packers indicated, some of the other system changes in the budget are not estimated. We don't have drivers to know how to do that yet. The distributions have changed. The blue is the funds that went to the general fund. The red is the amount that would go to the public safety fund, and there's some other distributions expenses as well. You can see again the reduction from the close of session to the current estimate for this biennium to the current estimate for next biennium. Impacts on programs, and I don't expect you to track all these, just to see kind of program by program where the changes are. DPSST, the debt service, is almost completely eliminated because of the decision to postpone construction facility. The operations budget is about 17% reduced. State police training is about a 40% reduction. The DOJ programs are reduced by about 25 to 30%. The health sciences programs, our new allocations are eliminated, as is the allocation for the Public Safety Memorial Fund. And I'm sure your appropriate subcommittee will want to spend time on that. But we've balanced to pretty much cuts all through this revenue source in order to deal with the shortfall. And that concludes my part. Too quickly, but done. And then we'll turn it over to Kelly Friels for Department of Justice and Judicial. Thank you.
morning, co-chairs, member of the committee. You will be done before 11 o'clock, based on my presentation, my plan presentation. I'm going to fly at about 60,000 feet, just given the time available. What I want to cover are the basic policy issues that I think you're going to have to discuss for both these agencies, starting with the Department of Justice. First issue I want to bring up has already been discussed by Doug Wilson, and that is the transfer of the child support program from the Department of Human Resources to the Department of Justice. If you look on this slide under the governor's recommended budget, you can see a sizable increase in general fund. It goes from about $23.6 million after the fifth special session up to $36.9 million. The vast majority of that increase is as a result of moving general fund from the Department of Human Services to DOJ. It's about $11.5 million increase. You'll also see a counterbalancing decrease in other funds and an increase in federal funds, again, all related to that transfer. And just for your reference, the House Bill 2340 is a substantive legislation that will drive that, the substantive discussion, and will drive into what decisions you want to make on the budget side. This is the same historical chart, just in bar form like you've seen before. And that the second policy issue I want to bring up is that the Department of Justice is the legal counsel for state agencies. About 75% of the purple area, the other funds, represent the resources necessary in order to provide that service. Within the governor's budget, we essentially left business as usual. With the shortfalls that are taking place, the question mark is, will legal service or the need for legal services decrease as a result or potentially increase as a result of these budget cuts? The governor's budget, again, leaves this revenue neutral. The assumption we have in the governor's budget for all agencies is that the cost for attorneys is going from $97 an hour up to $109. That assumption was based on the Department of Justice getting all the policy packages that they had requested. The governor did not include all of those policy packages, and based on salary freezes, we expect that rate to go down, but that's one of the discussions that the subcommittee is going to need to deal with as far as the level of reduction necessary for legal services and the counterbalancing savings in other budgets. Moving to the next slide, all I'm doing here is identifying all the reductions that you folks took as part of the actually second, third, and fifth special session. The extra transfer of the $1.2 million was in the second special session. And also to mention that we did have a December forecast reduction of about $112 million. And that will impact the Department of Justice's biennium a little under $300 million. And I'm not going to go through the details in the interest of time. And finally, the governor's budget did add staff. The assumption being if staff were added and it did not impact, or the governor added staff if it did not impact the general fund. So I have a listing of all the staff that were identified, about 24 staff. Some of those staff were self-financed within the department based on their infrastructure needs. Other staff were added as a result of workload anticipated, such as within the Secretary of State for their election fraud unit, and also within Department of Transportation based on planned projects that they have rolling out during the next biennium. And finally, Bill already covered CFAA, but that's obviously a major policy issue that needs to be discussed. The programs financed by CFAA, as Bill pointed out, decreased 20 to 25% in this department. So that covers the 60,000 viewpoint of Department of Justice. Do you have any questions?
You can come back, Kelly.
Can I have just one? You don't have to answer it now if you can't, but just to get the information to me, if they have it, how much of the cost is in the development of administrative rules and that the legal advice that's doing in that process, if they can break that out, or I don't know whether the agency can or not.
Mr. Chair and Senator Winters, that's actually a good question. I assume they do break out their cost. They have a pretty good system for identifying costs, but I'll ask them to provide
would you
that.
Ask that and which agencies or agencies have the? Could you rank them for us?
So let me make sure I understand the question.
Why don't you get with Senator Winters after your presentation? Clarify that, Kelly.
Good. Any other questions about DOJ? 2 minutes on the Oregon Judicial Department. The only 2 points I want to make are two. If you look at the If you look at the historical display, you can see that the Chief Justice's requested budget is reduced substantially. That is a result of the transfer of the Indigent Defense Fund from the Judicial Department to the Public Defense Services Commission. So a comparable number, if you want to make a comparison, would be in the 2001-03 legislative approved budget through the fifth special session. That would be about a $230 million budget. So the budget actually increases. And the final point that I'd like to make is that the Judicial Department is not under executive branch authority. So what we did, like with the legislative branch, is just leave these two budgets at the same level they were as of the fifth special session. There are no policy implications at that program level for general fund. So that concludes my presentation on this department, Mr. Chair. Told you I'd be short.
Very good. Any questions? We have 4 minutes. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I'm interested, going the two presentations that you just did, if you could get us the specifics on the victims' compensation programs, what the cuts are and what do they consist of, and then the specifics on the reductions to the domestic violence.
Actually, I have that information. You want to know what they had, the cuts this biennium, the impact next biennium?
Or to find out what the specifics are.
The impact of the cuts?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I could either provide that information, or if you're on the subcommittee, and I can't remember, the department is going to go through a very detailed discussion of that.
Thank you.
I can provide you the information, or they will provide it during their hearing.
Hearing is fine.
Okay, thank you.
And with that, we are adjourned.